Relief of Retinal Detachment by Clara E. Crandall. 25 years ago, Samuel D. was struck in the left eye by a nail thrown carelessly from a roof, and 19 years later, while he was chopping wood, a stick flew up, hitting him in the face and injuring the same eye. There were, apparently, no serious consequences from either of these accidents, but about a year after the second one, the patient noted that his sight was getting dim. He consulted an oculist, thinking that he probably required glasses, and was told that he had iritis. He was given drops for this condition and had been using them for a month when, on May 12, 1916, while digging in the garden, he went suddenly and completely blind in his left eye. The cause proved to be a detached retina, and the oculist whom he consulted sent him to a hospital where he underwent a thorough examination. His teeth were x-rayed, and it was thought best to remove his tonsils. He was then kept for 8 weeks motionless, flat upon his back. At the end of this time, it was found that the retina, as a result of the complete rest, had become partially reattached and the vision was, to some extent, improved. Hoping to improve it still further, the doctors operated upon the eye, but without success. 2 weeks later, a second operation was performed, after which the eye became totally blind again. The condition of the left eye was complicated by a traumatic cataract, and senile cataract now developed in the right. He was sent to another hospital in the autumn where he was again thoroughly examined, but the doctors decided that nothing more could be done for him. And so, with one eye totally blind and cataract rapidly obscuring the sight of the other, Samuel went back to his work as a gardener, trying to resign himself to the dark future before him. From month to month he struggled on, but he found it increasingly difficult to do his work, and felt that the time would soon come when he would have to give it up. He suffered greatly from the strain of trying to see and complained of a constant yellow glare in the blind eye, together with many other painful and unpleasant symptoms which, he said, interfered with the sight of his right eye also. From a time several years antedating his sudden attack of blindness, Samuel has been in the employ of my family. After he became blind, I went to Dr. Bates to have some eye troubles of my own treated, and, hearing of the many remarkable cures that were effected by his method of treatment, it occurred to me that he might be able to do something for Samuel. It seemed to Samuel a forlorn hope, but as it was the only one, he allowed me to take him last May to Dr. Bates' clinic in the Harlem Hospital. At this time, he was still without light perception in the left eye, and with the right was unable to make out the smaller letters on the test card when it was held a foot from his face, while even the largest letters appeared gray and blurred. Dr. Bates told him that the cataracts could be cured, and encouraged him to hope for improvement in the condition of the detached retina also. He told him to leave off the dark glasses he had been wearing, to palm as often and as long as possible, to drink 12 glasses of water a day, to imagine and flash the letters on the Snellen test card, and to imagine everything, himself included, as swinging. Samuel followed these instructions conscientiously, and in a short time the strain and other distressing symptoms from which he had previously suffered were greatly relieved. The sight of the blind eye improved gradually. At the first visit, he became able to distinguish light, and later he saw the shadowy image of a moving object, at first only when held close to the left side of his head, but afterward in all parts of his field of vision. The perception of light in the blind eye has grown steadily, and the vision has so improved that now, at a distance of 14 feet, he can see a moving object against a strong light, while at the near point he even thinks that he can sometimes catch a glimpse of the large letter on the Snellen test card. With the right eye, he can read the smallest letters on the test card at the near point, and they appear black and distinct. At 14 feet he can flash them. Among those who have benefited by Dr. Bates' remarkable discoveries, there is no one who owes more to them than Samuel D., for now, instead of having to look forward to blindness and utter dependence on others, he has been enabled to take up his life with renewed courage and interest, confident that if he faithfully continues the treatment he will eventually obtain good vision in both eyes. Stories from the Clinic. Number 13, The Relief of Blindness. By Emily C. Learman. Clinic day is always a happy day for me. It is true, one sees at the hospital a great deal of suffering, sorrow, and poverty, but it is a pleasure to be able to relieve some of the suffering, and sometimes things happen which are very amusing. Some time ago, a blind man was led into the clinic by a friend. This was a case which really ought to have been very sad, but it turned out, instead, to be very amusing. In spite of his affliction, the patient seemed to be in a happy mood and very well pleased with himself. He was neatly dressed and his shoes, though worn, were carefully shined, while over them he wore spats. His tie was a very bright red, and his hat was a light shade of tan. A cane, which his blindness compelled him to carry, completed a costume which I am sure he considered to be that of a real swell gentleman. When I approached him, he said in a very gracious manner, "Glad to see you, ma'am. Glad to see you, ma'am." And yet he could not see me, as I soon found out. I held my fingers before his eyes and asked him if he could see them. He answered that he could not. Further tests showed that he had no light perception whatever, and Dr. Bates said that his condition was due to atrophy of the optic nerve. I showed him how to palm, and after 5 minutes he pointed to an electric light in the ceiling and said, "It looks light there." I told him at once to palm again, and when he opened his eyes he saw the shadow of my fingers moving from side to side before his face. In a few moments, however, the blindness returned. Again I told him to palm, and while he was doing so I asked him if he could remember something black, or something else that he had seen before he became blind, such as a beautiful sunset, or white clouds. He thought a while, and then remembered that in the days when he had been a house painter he had used black paint. I told him to remember the black paint while he was palming, and then I left him to attend to other patients. When I came back to him I held two of my fingers close to his face, and asked him if he could see them. "Ma'am," he said, "I'm not at all sure, but I think I see two fingers." I think the man must have been quite popular with the ladies, for he now remarked that one of his lady friends would be pleased if he could see her. He came quite regularly for a time, and each time I noted improvement in his vision. Sometimes this was not very marked, and then I knew that he had not been palming very much at home. He was greatly helped by the focusing of the sun's rays upon the white of his eyes with a sunglass. This had a very soothing effect. He was soon able to dispense with his guide and, when leaving the clinic, used to use his cane to obviate collisions with the benches, nurses and patients. One day as he was leaving the room, Dr. Bates called my attention to him, and I noted that instead of tapping with his cane upon the floor he was carrying it on his arm. With head erect, he walked down the long corridor, opened the door and left the hospital, with apparently no more difficulty than a person with perfect sight. A little later he came with the cane. He became able at last to read the 50 line at 5 feet with both eyes, and then he stopped coming. Probably he thought he would be able to continue the treatment by himself. In the October, 1920, number of Better Eyesight, I wrote about another case of blindness from atrophy of the optic nerve, the patient having no light perception. Unlike the preceding patient, she was very much depressed by her condition, and begged me piteously to give her back the light of day. She had heard of our clinic through some of the patients, and had confidence that Dr. Bates or myself would give her some relief. But I was very far from feeling this confidence. Sometimes I am a doubting Thomas. I always try, however, not to reveal this fact to the patients, but simply go ahead and do the best I can. After this woman had palmed for 10 minutes or longer, all the time remembering black stove Polish, she became able to see the 200 letter a foot in front of her eyes. Since my previous article was written, she has become able to read the 10 line at this distance. She is able to go out to work during the day, and to work for herself at night, and she says she sleeps better. In the December, 1920, number I told the story of a woman who had absolute glaucoma of the right eye. This meant that she was stone blind. She was also suffering terrible pain in this eye. I had to do a great deal of coaxing to get her to palm, but I was willing to give her more time than I do to most of the patients, because her age was 79. With the exception of one or two relapses, she got on nicely, and the last time I saw her she had half normal vision for distance in the once blind eye and normal vision in the other. She had learned how to keep her eyes at rest by palming and using her imagination for flowers and other objects, and this relieved the strain which had been the cause of all the trouble. We have had many cases of total blindness at the clinic, most of them due to glaucoma and atrophy of the optic nerve, a few to detachment of the retina and iridocyclitis, and all have gained at least perception of light, while many have been more materially benefited. But most of them did not come more than a few times. It is unfortunate that the blind, as a rule, consider their condition so hopeless that it is difficult to convince them that any treatment is worthwhile, even after they have received some benefit from it. Hypermetropia. Unclear close vision, farsight. By W. H. Bates, M.D. The importance of hypermetropia cannot be overestimated. It is sometimes acquired soon after birth, or it may be manifest at 10, 20, 30, or 40 years of age. 80% of eye troubles are caused by hypermetropia, while nearsightedness occurs in 10%. There are only 10% of normal eyes. These figures are startling. The majority of persons at the age of 45 or over acquire hypermetropia, and it is of the utmost importance that such cases be carefully studied. Nearly everyone has the symptoms of hypermetropia. When the sight is good for distant vision, that does not necessarily mean that the sight is also good for reading at a near point of 10 or 12 inches. Too often such cases are not treated seriously. Poor sight for reading, hypermetropia, is usually corrected by the use of reading glasses, while vision at all other distances is neglected. In middle age, serious eye diseases are caused by hypermetropia. Among the most common are glaucoma, cataract, and diseases of the optic nerve and retina. In the early stages of these serious diseases, they are more readily curable than after they become chronic and more serious, because the vision is only slightly affected and the treatment which cures hypermetropia is the treatment which prevents serious eye diseases. Cataract and glaucoma are now being prevented or cured by treatment which cures hypermetropia. It should be emphasized that early treatment of hypermetropia yields quicker, more continuous results than later treatment. Eye physicians or ophthalmologists have almost universally believed that absolute glaucoma is not curable by any form of treatment. It has been demonstrated that glaucoma is caused by strain, the strain of hypermetropia. When this strain is relieved or corrected, glaucoma usually improves. This treatment is more successful than operation or eye drops. It is only in the last 10 years that it was discovered that glaucoma is caused by a strain which produces hypermetropia and that when this strain is relieved the glaucoma improves. I think it is a mistake to condemn this simple method of relieving the hypermetropia, which also relieves glaucoma. The eye strain which produces hypermetropia also produces cataract. It has been repeatedly demonstrated that in all diseases of the eyes which cause imperfect sight, the eye is under a strain and when this strain is removed all diseases of the eye are benefited. Patients with atrophy of the optic nerve have good sight when eye strain is not present. For example, a patient came from Austria for treatment of amblyopia which was so advanced that the vision in one eye was only perception of light and in the other eye it was one half of normal. She had consulted many physicians who advised operation for the cure of the total blindness. She was given the hypermetropia treatment daily for about 2 weeks, at the end of which time the vision was normal in both eyes. Surely if hypermetropia treatment can be so beneficial, more physicians ought to know about it. There have been numerous similar cases. It can be demonstrated that atrophy of the optic nerve can be caused by the eye strain of hypermetropia. palming, swinging, central fixation have always improved the sight temporarily or permanently. It is interesting to prove that such a disease as atrophy of the optic nerve can be benefited by the treatment which relieves hypermetropia. Patients suffering from squint are benefited by hypermetropia treatment. Patients with hypermetropia not only strain to produce squint with one or both eyes turned in, but they also strain to correct the imperfect sight which is caused by the squint. This fact should be more widely known, because even at this time many physicians believe that the poor sight caused by hypermetropia is incurable. Two types of strain combined. One type of strain can lead to a secondary different type of strain. What is the lowest degree of hypermetropia that can be produced? Is a question that has been asked. The answer is that there is no limit, not only to the low degree of hypermetropia, but there is no limit to the high degrees. In other words, by an effort hypermetropia of 30 diopters or more can be produced and, by treatment, perfect vision can be obtained just as readily. In studying the production of high or low degrees of hypermetropia, it is interesting to discover the conclusions of well-known ophthalmologists. One prominent doctor was asked this question, "Is hypermetropia curable?" He replied that it was not curable. He was then asked, "Why do you claim that no one can cure hypermetropia?" He answered, "I know that it cannot be cured because I was unable to succeed, and if I cannot succeed, no one else can." Massage of the eyelids has been recommended for the cure of hypermetropia. Another doctor claimed that he was able to cure a majority of the cases of hypermetropia, and that if the patient was not cured by massage, no other doctor in the world could succeed. Other physicians, however, did not believe that massage was a cure for hypermetropia. Since hypermetropia is so common and produces so many different kinds of eye trouble, imperfect sight, pain, dizziness, and other nervous symptoms to a greater extent than do other errors of refraction, it is well to understand as much as we can of the occurrence, symptoms, prevention, and cure of hypermetropia. The best methods of preventing hypermetropia are this way: reading fine print such as diamond type, palming occasionally, and imagining stationary objects to be moving when the eyes move in the same or opposite direction. Oppositional movement, the last one of these methods, is not always easy to practice. Some cases are very obstinate without any known reason. They may try for days, without success, to imagine stationary objects to be moving. The cause of failure is usually due to concentration, staring, looking fixedly at stationary objects, and efforts to try to see. When success is not attained, hold the finger about 6 inches from the chin while looking at distant objects and move the head and eyes from side to side, taking care not to look directly at the finger. When this movement of the head and eyes is practiced easily, continuously, the finger appears to move in the opposite direction. This method is called the variable swing, and most people have no trouble whatever in imagining the finger moving. The length of the movement of the finger is much wider than stationary objects regarded at 10, 20, or 40 feet or farther. Distant objects appear to move with the eyes in the same direction. Another case of failure occurs when the patient turns the head to the right and simultaneously turns the eyes to the left. It is a very painful experience. When one fails to obtain movement of stationary objects with the variable swing, he suffers much pain, dizziness, and other nervous symptoms. Hypermetropia may be prevented by many other methods. The memory or the imagination of perfect sight prevents hypermetropia in the normal eye. The memory of imperfect sight is very difficult, and the memory or imagination of perfect sight is easy.
This is Clark Knight. Dr. Bates uses hypermetropia to describe unclear close vision. Myopia is unclear distant vision. Farsight also pertains to unclear close vision. Unclear reading vision is usually called, I think it's pronounced presbyopia.
In the city of Chicago, a school teacher developed a method of treating children which prevented hypermetropia from being acquired. She had charge of about 50 or more children at the age when fatigue is common. As a result, all the teachers in the Chicago school allowed their children to rest for a time at frequent intervals, about every half an hour in two-minute sprint. They were taught relaxation methods, although they were all under 10 years of age. It was astonishing to observe how much they could remember, how much they could imagine, and how much their activities were improved with benefit to their eyes. Sometimes the usual exercises in the classroom would be stopped and the children would be taught how to palm successfully and while palming to improve their imagination. They were taught to draw pictures which they copied from the blackboard 20 feet away. After some months, the hypermetropia was improved and finally entirely cured. A school teacher in Long Island was treated by me for compound hypermetropic astigmatism. By the use of relaxation methods, the hypermetropia and astigmatism were corrected and the patient obtained normal vision. The hypermetropia was prevented from increasing by curing it. The patient was very much pleased with the results and told the principal of her school that, because hypermetropia was curable, it was also preventable. A negative proposition cannot be the truth. Hypermetropia could be prevented when it was found possible to cure it. A number of teachers became interested, and all those wearing glasses for hypermetropia were cured, either by palming or swinging or by the memory of fine print. The principal was much pleased and placed a Snellen test card in all the cases rooms, with directions that it should be read by all the teachers and pupils who were afflicted with hypermetropia. The first patient cured of hypermetropia was to continue the work. Since she could not treat patients in the classrooms, she decided to treat them outside the school building. She made an arrangement with the teachers who wished treatment that she would teach them how to use their eyes properly and prevent or cure hypermetropia. She made arrangements with them all that after a teacher was cured, she would agree to teach, cure, or prevent some other teacher from acquiring hypermetropia. So much interest was shown by the teachers in this school building that it made an endless chain, and a great many teachers and school children were cured of hypermetropia. For many years, it has been believed that retardation is incurable. It seemed wrong that children 15 or 16 years old and older should be kept in the grades with children 10 years old or under. These children did not like to study. Many of them complained of severe headaches and other discomforts. Truancy was common. After retardation was cured by relaxation methods, most of the children started in and worked hard with their studies, with the result that many of them graduated into the rapid advancement classes. I was told by many principals that imperfect sight was never found in the rapid advancement classes. Nearly all cases of retardation were suffering from hypermetropia. It was demonstrated that patients suffering from imperfect sight from any cause were also suffering from retardation. The teachers who devoted an hour or more every day to the cure of hypermetropia discovered, much to their surprise, that almost every disease of the eye and nervous system was benefited or cured by treatment which cured hypermetropia. In 1 year, 20,000 pupils suffered from pain, headache, loss of memory, imperfect sight from hypermetropia. In 1 year after, 80% of the 20,000 children who were suffering from headaches and other nervous troubles all recovered after the hypermetropia was cured. Reading fine print improves eye muscle relaxation, function, coordination, shape of and normal pressure on/in the eye, central fixation, shifting, resulting in improved circulation of blood, fluids in the eye, resulting in healthy eyes and clear close and distant vision. Christmas 1928 by Emily A. Bates. As I began to write my Christmas story, a sense of fear comes over me that I might forget to give credit where it is due, or to omit some important detail which helped to make our Christmas party, I think, the best we ever had. I should say parties, for there were three of them. One party was held at the office of a doctor here in New York, who specializes in ear, nose, and throat work. This doctor, with his untiring efforts, has saved the lives of many children who were suffering from a stoppage of the throat from diphtheria or some other diseases which affected the larynx and trachea. It doesn't matter what hour it may be, he is always ready to respond to a call at a time when other doctors are asleep. Both he and his nurse deserve only the highest kind of praise for the wonderful work that they are doing. Along with his private practice, he has a host of charity cases. Among them are children of the slums, who would not be alive today if it were not for his skill. The doctor's nurse gives untiringly of her time to the children who need her special care. In her kind, quiet way, she explains to some patients how necessary it is to be clean. Most of these patients are little soldiers and never tell the doctor during their treatment whether it hurts or not. He knows and so does the nurse. So after the treatment is over, they are usually repaid for their courage with good things to eat. In the group assembled at our Christmas festival were children between the ages of 6 and 16. The younger children all believed in Santa Claus and were anxious to know what he had brought for them. Mothers of some of them were present, and they shared in what there was to give. We were quite certain at the Christmas party that the doctor was the happiest of the group. The large dining table was filled with tempting things to eat, and our Christmas fund provided all of his charges with useful gifts. Each of the boys over 10 years of age received the usual necktie. Each of the younger boys received a mechanical toy of some sort, while each of the little girls received a doll. Purses were given to the older girls. Boxes of good candy from Lofts, oranges and apples were provided for all, including the mothers. One of the poor patients of our own clinic, a woman whose sight was so impaired when she first came to us that she could not make her living, placed an envelope in the hand of our assistant, Mississippi Hayes, and said, "It is only a little that I have to give, but let me help someone less fortunate than I am, and you and Mrs. Bates will find that someone much better than I can." She made me think of the widow's mite and how much it meant to the greatest teacher this world has ever had. When we opened the envelope, we found not a mite, but $10. This woman had had what is known as compound myopic astigmatism. Her eyes at times were much irritated, and the pain she suffered prevented her from doing any sort of work. She came for 2 years off and on, and during the last year was able to earn her living again. When she first came, her vision with the test card was 10/70 in the right eye and 10/50 in the left. Her vision at the near point was also very poor, and she had been obliged to wear glasses when she attempted to do any close work. When we last saw her, her vision had improved to 10/10 in each eye, and she was able to read number 15 on the fundamental card at 8 inches from her eyes. She no longer wore her glasses, and she said that the pain from which she suffered had entirely disappeared. Although I am usually at the office during clinic hours, the doctor's work keeps me in other parts of our office during clinic time each Saturday morning. Mississippi Hayes deserves all the credit for the cure of this poor woman, as well as other cases. Not once has she failed us in taking care of her charges, and the many cases which have been treated and permanently cured by her are more than grateful. The poor woman was very happy when she learned that her money was spent to make not only one, but 8 unfortunate boys, happier than they had been for a long time. These boys had their first real Christmas party in all the years of their confinement in the home for feeble-minded. The one who had charge over these boys was a Bates student. She came first to Dr. Bates as a patient, and after she was cured, she studied the method so that she could help others. Fate and good fortune brought her to this home for the feeble-minded in Thiel's, NY, where hundreds of boys and girls and men and women are confined because their minds are not normal. The 8 boys who were made happy because of our Christmas fund were between the ages of 17 and 20 years of age, but their minds were like those of little children at the age of 8 years or younger. Time and again those who took care of them left because the strain was too great. Others who were less tender-hearted did not handle the boys properly, which did not aid in the improvement of the minds of these poor unfortunates. For no other reason but to be of good service, Mississippi Anna Wozner came to take charge and see what she could do for them. The boys responded quickly under her gentle treatment and care and changed in time from being destructive to being useful and willing to learn. Some of them had a constant desire to steal anything they could lay their hands on when she was not looking, but she did not lose patience with them or threaten them at any time. She studied their greatest faults and weaknesses and taught them right from wrong. Although she did not mention to the heads of the institution the method that she was using to improve the minds of her charges, she went about in a quiet way, teaching them relaxation and rest of the mind and body by using the Bates method. She allowed them to come to her room after their work hours were over and encouraged them to read her test cards, teaching them how to rest their eyes by palming. They would do anything to hear a fairy story, so while their eyes were closed and covered they sat quietly while she told them simple fairy tales. She taught them the long swing of the body, explaining how well the big elephant could do it and how restful and happy he was because it relaxed him. She explained that relaxation meant that he was on his good behavior when he did the long swing. Even though their simple minds did not grasp everything she told them, they at least understood what good behavior meant. Mississippi Wozner's mother, one of the good old-fashioned kind one reads about, always had a package for her to take back to the home after her weekend visit with her family and friends. The package usually contained homemade jellies and homemade cake which the mother prepared, arranging everything temptingly for the boys. It was always a joy to the boys to see Mississippi Wozner return to them. When they did wrong, they were denied the good things which she had for them. When they repented and promised to do better next time, they were always forgiven and given their share of the contents of the package. She taught them how to make flowers of tissue paper, and being an expert herself at making wax flowers, she taught them how to do this also. Some of their work was placed on exhibition for visitors to see when they called at the home. When our Christmas package arrived for them, each boy received a tie as well as candy and oranges. One of the boys sent a letter which he had written all by himself. It was hardly readable, but expressed the gratitude of each one, and the letter ended by saying that he was anxious that I should receive his most precious possession, a live bunny rabbit, as a gift. At our own Christmas party, which was held at our new offices, there were about 8 children altogether. No partiality was shown among the children, so the presents that were purchased for the boys were carefully chosen so that each one received a similar gift. The same thing was done in selecting the dollies for the little girls. The men received ties and the women handkerchiefs and purses. Our tree for the clinic family seemed more beautiful than ever. It was lit up with electric lights and placed in the reception room where everyone could enjoy it. There was one old lady who was especially happy with her gift. She had saved up enough money from her husband's small earnings during the year to buy a much-needed winter coat for herself. She had also managed to buy a cheap hat, and now with her new purse, she had a complete new outfit. She had been coming to the clinic almost every Saturday for about a year. She had been suffering from cataract in both eyes. Her vision was so bad when she first came that she was unable to come alone and had to be brought to the office by her sister-in-law. She was very much frightened the first day, because, not knowing very much about the doctor's work, she thought that he might advise operation as had other doctors whom she had consulted. She was very much relieved when she was told that Dr. Bates did not operate and that he had cured cataract without operation or eye drops. She was ready to devote as much time as necessary to home practice. She sat in the sun every morning for an hour or longer, she palmed or rested her eyes every hour for 10 minutes, and practiced the long swing every night and morning. When she first came, her vision was 10/200 in the right eye and 10/100 in the left. She complained of a mist before her eyes, which was becoming worse all the time. Dr. Bates examined her eyes several times during the year and each time found an improvement in their condition. The last time her vision was tested, she could read the line next to the bottom at 10 feet, 10 fifteenths, with either eye, and the mist which had troubled her for so long had almost entirely disappeared. It was only when she strained her eyes that it would bother her, and after she relaxed her eyes it disappeared. She stopped coming soon after Christmas, before she was entirely cured, but I feel sure that she kept up her practice at home. Dr. Bates, Mississippi Hayes, and I wish to take this opportunity to express our gratitude to those who added to the clinic Christmas fund and helped to make our Christmas parties possible. Notice. Dr. Bates, as well as the Central Fixation Publishing Company, has been receiving a number of letters recently from people who have been unsuccessfully treated by practitioners who have not taken Dr. Bates' course of instruction and do not understand the Bates method thoroughly. Dr. Bates gives a course of instruction to doctors, teachers, nurses, and others who wish to practice his method professionally. At the end of the course, the student receives a certificate authorizing him to help others by the Bates method. Those wishing further particulars may obtain them by writing direct to Dr. Bates at 18 East 48th Street, New York City. A suggestion. A great many people who have been benefited by Dr. Bates' book, Perfect Sight Without Glasses, Mrs. Bates' Stories from the Clinic, or by Better Eyesight, order copies of the books or subscriptions to Better Eyesight to be sent to some of their friends suffering from imperfect sight. Why not order books or subscriptions for some of your friends as a Christmas gift? We will mail books direct to the recipients, postage prepaid, and enclose your Christmas card. Questions and answers. Q. Would the reading of fine print at 4 inches be helpful? A. The reading of fine print at 4 inches is usually helpful. Q. You mentioned the black period in your book. Must this be any particular size? I only imagine large round black objects like cannonballs, the center of a target, or a moving football. This is restful, but is it beneficial? A. No. Anything that is restful is beneficial. Q. I have attained normal vision, but after reading for a while, my eyes feel strained. Would you still consider I had normal sight? A. If your eyes feel strained, you are not reading with normal vision. Q. Seeing stationary objects moving appears to me to be merely self-hypnotism. I can't do it. A. When riding in a train, the stationary telephone poles appear to move in the opposite direction. Of course, this is an illusion, but it is a benefit to the eyes to imagine all stationary objects moving. Q. Is it possible to cure squint in a child under 2 years of age by the Bates method, and what is the treatment employed? A. A child, 2 years of age or younger, can be treated and cured of squint, with or without imperfect sight, by the Bates method. The treatment is varied. The swing can be practiced by the mother holding the child in her arms. If the child is able to stand or walk, it is held by the hands and the sway is practiced with the child moving from side to side. Keeping time with music encourages the child to continue the swaying for a longer time. Improving the memory and imagination of the child is also recommended. The child is encouraged to play with toy animals and is taught the names of the different animals. Usually the animals are placed on the floor in groups and the child is asked to pick up the animals as they are named. As the child reaches for one and then another, the parent may observe whether the child goes directly toward the toy or reaches to either side of it. This method is used in extreme cases of squint where the child does not see perfectly where is looking. Colored yarns are also used in these cases. The child is taught the names of different colors. An improvement is always noted after such treatment, because the child is constantly shifting his glance from one colored skein of yarn to the other as he selects the one called for. The problem is to educate the eyesight. The more the eyes are used, the better. Palming is beneficial in the cure of squint. If the child is told that it is just a game of peek-a-boo, he immediately becomes interested and enjoys it. Reading a story to the child as he palms is usually beneficial and improves the squint. With children 3 years or older, the pothook card is used. This is a test card with the letter E pointing in various directions. The child tells whether it is pointing up or down, left or right. If a mistake is made, palming is introduced in order to rest the eyes. Children with squint are usually unruly, disobedient, or destructive. When the squint is improved, a change in their conduct is also noted. They become quiet, obedient, and their mental efficiency is improved. See left and right brain hemisphere activation, integration, balance, and other new methods for curing squint. Blinking. The normal eye, when it has normal sight, rests very frequently by closing the eyes for longer or shorter periods, and when practiced quickly it is called blinking. When the normal eye has normal sight and refrains from blinking for some seconds or part of a minute, the vision always becomes imperfect. You can demonstrate that normal vision at the near point or at the distance is impossible without frequent blinking. Most people blink so easily and for such a short period of time that things are seen continuously while the blinking is done unconsciously. In some cases, one may blink 5 times or more in 1 second. The frequency of blinking depends on a number of factors. The normal eye blinks more frequently or more continuously under adverse conditions, as when the illumination is diminished, the distance is increased, or the print read is too pale or otherwise imperfect. The distraction of conversation, noise, reflections of light, objects so arranged as to be difficult to see, all increase the frequency of blinking of the normal eye with normal sight. If the frequency of blinking is diminished under adverse conditions or from any cause, the vision soon becomes imperfect. The imperfect eye, or the eye with imperfect sight, blinks less frequently than the normal eye. Staring stops the blinking. The universal optical swing, the long or short swing when modified or stopped, are always accompanied by less frequent blinking. Blink in the early morning, blink when the sun sets at night. Blink when the sun is dawning, but be sure you do it right. Blindness. By W. H. Bates, M.D. A great many people are blind or have vision so imperfect that they are unable to find their way about a strange place with the aid of their eyes. They are usually an object of interest to their friends and are frequently recommended to try every new form of treatment which comes out that promises any relief. They are too often disappointed. The orthodox ophthalmologist has been guided by a certain number of rules. For example, a patient who has no perception of light is at once considered incurable, no matter what may be the condition of the eyes. The first shock that I experienced in such cases was in that of a girl who had total blindness in one eye only, the other being fairly good. She had been to many physicians, and all pronounced her incurable because she had no perception of light in the blind eye. This was a long time ago, and at that time I did not know as much as I do now, and told the patient that nothing could be done to improve the blind eye. The eye itself appeared normal. There was no opacity and no organic disease which I was able to find. She told me that one doctor said she was born with something wrong with the eye center in the brain, which accounted for the blindness in the one eye. However, I treated her, planning to improve the slight, imperfect sight that she had in the good eye. Much to my surprise, the vision in the blind eye simultaneously began to get better. The first improvement the patient noticed was that she could see strong light off to the outer side of the eye, while her vision straight ahead and to her left was still dark. One of the most remarkable things about the case was the rapidity with which the blind eye obtained perception of light when the vision improved for objects and letters of the Snellen test cardinal. After 2 weeks of daily treatment, the vision of the right eye had improved to 10/200, and at the end of another week she had 20/20. From the results of treatment and other reasons, I believe that this was just a case of blindness from squint without the squint, which is called in the textbooks amblyopia ex anopsia. After doing her so much good, I expected that she would return or at least send word how she was getting along. She was not heard from again. I believe, if there had been any relapse, she might have returned. Sometimes these cases do relapse, and I learn the facts from friends of the patient. About 5 years ago, a patient was led into my office, blind from retinitis pigmentosa. The vision of the right eye was perception of light, while that of the left eye was 5/200. The pupils of both eyes were small, and in order to examine the interior of her eyes, her pupils were dilated with a weak solution of atropine. It was followed very quickly by an attack of acute glaucoma. This subsided after about 2 weeks. The vision of the better eye was lowered to perception of light, while that of the right eye, which had been practically blind for many years, had improved to 10/200. This was a great surprise because it was so unexpected. After many months of daily treatment, she obtained normal vision in the right eye and almost normal vision in the left eye. She stopped treatment against my advice. The case was published in the New York Medical Journal, February 3, 1917. Glaucoma is a very treacherous disease. One may have an attack and recover promptly under treatment. The same patient may have a number of attacks of temporary blindness, but sooner or later the patient will suffer an attack of glaucoma with total blindness, from which no recovery follows spontaneously. The patient goes to some competent ophthalmologist, who at once tells him that there is no hope of anything being done. At one time, I examined with a microscope 6 eyes which had been enucleated for the relief of great pain from absolute glaucoma. Not one of these eyes was imperfect in any way. Quite frequently I have seen cases of absolute glaucoma which came to me for treatment, and which were completely relieved by palming and obtained normal vision in a very few days or weeks, some in even a shorter time. One such case, about 10 years ago, had pain so severe that he was unable to attend to his business, and had been strongly advised to have the eye removed. He came to me as his last resort. After a half hour of palming, the pain disappeared, and has not returned since in all this time. I saw the patient a few days ago and he is still full of gratitude for the benefit he received. If my method never did anything more than to relieve the tension and pain of glaucoma, I would feel that I had done something worthwhile. Whenever I think of those glaucoma cases I relieved, it is a very difficult matter for me to refrain from boasting. There are many eye doctors of my acquaintance who do not believe that palming does much for glaucoma, although I have gone to a great deal of trouble to advertise the fact. So strongly impressed on the minds of ophthalmologists that absolute glaucoma is incurable, that I can understand how difficult it is for men of experience to imagine that any of these cases can be benefited. Someday, soon I hope, some doctor will try the palming on a hopeless case and be gratified to find that these cases can be helped. If he has the courage to publish the facts, he will find that his brother practitioners will not be as severe with him as he might expect. Some eye specialists have privately observed my work. And, although they at the time admitted that I was right and everybody else was wrong, they hesitated to endorse any of my discoveries publicly. Many patients have said to me, "You cured me after other doctors failed." When I went back to some of them and reported the facts, they had nothing to say. What is the matter with them? Recently I was asked if my methods were of any benefit to the blindness of babies who have lost their sight from an infection soon after birth. I believe that these cases can be prevented by the well-known simple treatment as most doctors agree, but after the disease has caused blindness, very few or no doctors believe that much can be done to restore the sight. Some years ago I treated a girl, aged 14, whose right eye was blind following a severe inflammation of her eyes soon after birth. She was unable to see moving objects with this blind eye, but had perception of light. I had her hold the Snellen test card in her hand, close to her face, and to move it from side to side for a half hour or longer. In the beginning, she could not imagine that the card was moving, but by appealing to her common sense, she admitted that she did move the card, and furthermore that although she could not see it move, she could imagine it. The next day she practiced in the same way, and told me that she could imagine some black specks on this moving card and that the card was beginning to look more or less white. In a week's time she was able, as a result of daily use of the card, to see about half the letters with the card held close to her eyes. In another week she read the whole card. Then the card was placed gradually further off, and at the end of about 3 months the opacity on the front part of her eye had almost entirely disappeared and her vision had improved to 20/20. I wish to emphasize that many cases of so-called incurable blindness can be completely relieved. It is wrong for any doctor or group of doctors who cannot cure cataract, for example, without an operation, to insist that because they cannot cure it nobody else can. Stories from the Clinic. 52, A Blind Boy. By Emily C. Learman. Not long ago he came to us. Only 12 years old, but blind. His name is Louis and he is of Jewish birth. If Louis had been born blind he would not have had so many plans about the future, nor would he have been so sad. During the month of March, 1923, he was operated upon for mastoiditis. Dr. Bates found with the ophthalmoscope that the boy had atrophy of the optic nerve of both eyes. From the history of the case, he believed that the cause of the trouble was probably associated with an abscess of the brain, from the disease of the left ear. After the operation for the relief of the brain abscess, a cerebral hernia appeared above and behind the left auditory canal. The hernia was about 2 inches long by 1 inch wide and projected outside the skull a distance of about 1 inch. For several months before the boy was seen by us, the size of the cerebral hernia, we were told by the mother, had not changed. Before the operation or before the mastoid trouble he was a perfectly normal, healthy boy, full of life and hope. I shouldn't wonder but what he might have been planning to be a bank president or a radio expert, from the discussion we had together, after we became acquainted. The morning of his first visit to us a telephone message came. A teacher from the school for the blind wished Dr. Bates would see him. The appointment was made and inside of 1 hour the boy arrived with his mother. Her eyes were staring at the doctor's face as he examined Louis' eyes, straining every nerve of her body, fearing the verdict might be, no more hope. After the examination, Dr. Bates came to my office and told me about the case and asked, wouldn't you like to see him? I think you could help him to see again. Oh, wonderful faith. It is the faith Dr. Bates has in me that keeps me going. His encouragement has helped me to benefit cases that would otherwise have seemed hopeless to me. When I entered the room where Louis was, I saw a very forlorn-looking boy sitting all huddled up in his chair, staring out of sightless eyes. His mother talked a blue streak to me, which was something like this, boy, mine boy that he should be blind. Please do you think he can once more see? Von year he be use blind, can see nothing. Before dat he be use big and healthy. Of course the mother heart was crying out loud for help, and it was pitiable to hear her. I tried to explain that we would do everything possible for her boy, but I could not get a word in edgeways. I just closed my eyes for a few moments and prayed for help. I then spoke to Lewis as though he could see me and placed a test card in his hands, advising him to keep his eyes closed and relax in his chair as much as possible while he was doing this. I told him it was very necessary not to worry or to think of his blindness. He could think of a sunset, he said, also a white cloud in a blue sky. With just a few minutes of this treatment, he opened his eyes and saw that the card was white. I had him close his eyes again very quickly and asked him to remember the whiteness of drifted snow. He said he could remember or imagine he saw the snow, but he could imagine a white cloud much whiter. I said, "All right, keep remembering the white cloud, but imagine it is moving." He said he could do that easily. After a half hour or more, Lewis opened his eyes and flashed a big black spot on the top of the card. I said, "If you will move the card slightly from side to side, you will become able to see what that black spot is on the top of the card." Another half hour had passed by, both of us doing our very best, when all of a sudden my patient said, "It is a letter C." Then the mother screamed, "ACH got, mine boy sees." She threw her hands in the air, murmuring all the while that her poor boy could see. Then she became hysterical and disturbed all the patients in the treatment rooms. I placed my arm gently around her and led her into my office, and then we both cried. My heart was with this poor mother, but my thoughts were of the boy, too. We had left him all alone and I was worried. I told her to offer a little prayer of thanks to him who had heard my plea. I said, "Your God is my God, too, so ask him to help us." I left her to see what Lewis was doing and I found him faithfully palming his eyes. Although weary and tired after I had worked with Lewis over 2 hours, I was repaid a thousandfold when he read every letter of the 70 line and 50 line as he moved the test card slowly from side to side, close to his eyes, blinking all the time. He was instructed to stand and swing his body from side to side to lessen the tension of his body, also to blink his eyes all the time to stop staring. Then to practice with the test card, many times a day, moving it slowly from side to side as he flashed the letters of each line on the card. On his second visit, he read the smallest letters on the card, the 10 line, but to do this he had to hold the card so close that it touched his nose. On his third visit he read the bottom line, holding the card an inch or more away from his nose. The sun treatment always helps him and he is advised to stay in the sun as much as possible. The cerebral hernia, which on his first visit was very much inflamed or red in appearance, had lost most of its redness, and the size of the hernia was less. On his last visit I placed him in front of a large mirror, and he saw it plainly. He could also see me standing behind him as he looked into the mirror. The sad look in his eyes is no longer there. Lewis informed me that a friend had given him a radio set, which he enjoys when he is not practicing with the test card. His smile is wonderful to see and his mother is more than grateful because of the hope we have given her in restoring the sight of her boy.